As we speak on his wife's birthday, Drew Brees is in the tender hands of Dr. Stephen Shin. All Saints fans hoping for the best, and a tribute to the fallen hero on the top of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Tigers, big favorites over the Commodores. We'll see if the 11 a.m. start causes any issues. A big week of college football. Michael Heuning joins us with his picks, and whether you love him or not, he deserves what he got yesterday. All the explanations today, Wednesday, September 18th, 2019.
You know, I'm not sure the offense will change, you know, substantially. I think it'll be what we do. It'll be what we've repped since the spring and what we're used to. So, you know, I don't see it changing a whole lot. You know, we've got a good system. We've got, you know, good players who are used to the system. So I think it'll stay pretty consistent.
You know, I think about all this stuff all the time. But when the game was over, you know, and again, it's not all about Eli. It's about there's other factors involved, you know, our team, where we're at, and moving forward. But, you know, certainly the most of the thought for me happened after the game.
We go as usual. I mean, we game plan as usual. You know, we understand that we could miss a player or two, but at the same time, we can't focus on that. We got to get the next guy ready, and you know, we go in and coach that player up and get him prepared. But from a game plan standpoint, we're playing a good football team in the Lions, and coming off a victory, and we got to be prepared.
The NFL. As we approach week three of the NFL season, that was Doug Peterson of the Eagles at the end of it. We started off with the new starting quarterback of the Giants, Daniel Jones, and his head coach who pulled the trigger on the deal, Pat Shurmur. And with that, we say a great good afternoon and happy Wednesday to you and your CD in the Master Control Suite, the 237 Roof Studios, campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, 103.7 The Game, and 103.7thegame.com. Yours truly, Studio 1A. As we speak, Drew Brees is sedated in a hospital room or an operating room in Los Angeles with Dr. Stephen Shin performing surgery on his torn ligament in his right thumb of his throwing hand. We won't know the timetable for his return until the surgery is complete. Brees made that decision after visiting Shin in Los Angeles on Monday and Dr. Tom Hunt in Houston yesterday for a second opinion, and now they're getting it done. Getting it done. Everyone keeps talking about 6 weeks. Drew Brees will not be placed on the injured reserve as we speak. So let's see what happens. Time will tell. Meanwhile, pressure washing the roof of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And before they cleaned it up completely, they put the hashtag 9 up there for the world to see. With everyone's thoughts and prayers on Drew Brees. Sean Payton, meanwhile, in Seattle, declined to name a starter for the Saints' first game without Brees on Sunday at Seattle, saying, quote, "We'll approach this game with two quarterbacks, in veteran Teddy Bridgewater and dual-threat athlete Taysom Hill." I think that's the right thing to do. I don't think it's like you do in the NFL where, okay, this is our starter, and he's going to play come hell or high water the entire game. Peyton believes the Saints can gain a tactical advantage by forcing the Seahawks to prepare for two quarterbacks with two different styles. Now, Peyton continued to staunchly defend Bridgewater today, pointing out that the offensive line play and penalties were the biggest culprits for New Orleans' lack of success in Sunday's 27-9 loss to the Rams after Brees left in the first quarter. And that's true. But he also indicated that Hill will be part of the game plan after he was used often in read option packages last season. Quoting Sean Payton, "We'll have the right plan relative to what those guys are doing. Look, these guys have been here now for two seasons. It's just kind of taking a step back and looking at the things we want to do with those guys in the game and putting that plan in place this week in practice. They'll both get a lot of reps. They'll both have a package or two that they are comfortable with, that they are confident in, that the coaches are confident they can execute. And it's all hands on deck. All hands on deck. Players get hurt all the time. The season is not over. You must still continue to play the games, right? Now, granted, it's the quarterback. But you got to keep playing. So I'll be very, very, very curious to see what happens. Let's go to our phone line. James is calling. He wants to talk about the Drew Brees injury. James, enlighten us. What you got?
Well, just a quick comment. The six-week recovery period is very generous. I mean, they are being very helpful with that.
Yes.
I tore the ligament in my right thumb over the knuckle while I was in the military. And this was, oh, God,
okay,
over a decade ago. And I'm telling you, to this day, I still have pain in there. Okay, you can still feel it. If I flex it the wrong way or whatever the case may be, it's still painful. Now, of course, I don't have no world-renowned surgeon. I had a military surgeon doing my surgery at the time. But nonetheless, that is an injury. 6 weeks is being very, very, very generous.
James, thank you for the
insight. You know, unless you're getting shot up in there on a constant basis to not feel that pain, 6 weeks, it'll be longer than 6 weeks.
James, thank you. I appreciate the call. I hope you're feeling better a decade or so later, but I understand. I agree. 6 weeks, you know, he's a world-class athlete with world-class facilities and world-class treatment and world-class doctors. So I think people are hoping beyond hope that is what the case is. We will see. I don't have a clue. I think it varies from person to person, from circumstance to circumstance. How severe of a torn ligament is it? You know what? I have no clue. But we will find out. Time will always tell. All we know is that the Saints have to tread water. And it starts this weekend against Seattle, a very difficult place to play. The Seahawks are 2-0 on the year, but they've only outscored their opponents in the two wins by 3 points. They've scored 49. Their opponents have scored 46. It's not the old Legion of Boom, but it's still a very difficult place to play. And then the Cowboys come to the Saints' home stadium the following weekend. So we'll see what happens. You got to play the game. You got to hope for the best. And everybody else has to elevate their game now to help the Saints in whatever fashion that they can. It means the running backs have to run better because the offensive line has to do a better job. And Bridgewater and Taysom Hill have to be ready to make the right throw at the right time to the right person. Plain and simple. Can't beat themselves, can't continue to get all these penalties, and the defense has to play a full 60 minutes like they played the first 30 minutes in the L.A. Coliseum. You do that, you got a chance to win. No question about it. No question about it. All right, coming up on the program today, three gentlemen in their usual Wednesday time slots. Chris Truax, the former LSU lineman, will take us in the trenches. The very latest on LSU, some big, big-time injuries that the Tigers are facing, particularly on the defensive side of the football. How will that affect them as they are heavy, heavy favorites to go into Nashville and beat the Vanderbilt Commodores? In hour number two after Hot Topics, John Hendricks will share more of his thoughts on the Saints. John, of course, with Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. And then Michael Hugin stops by Good week of college football. You got Auburn at Texas A&M, Michigan at Wisconsin, Notre Dame at Georgia, and some sneaky good games under the radar. So we'll divulge and digest all of that with Michael Hugonen. I always say that we are the station that keeps on giving and giving and giving some more, and we do it all the time. We've got at Twin Peaks, we've got our Pro Pick'em Challenge. If you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station, all you have to do is make sure you get your picks in for week three at 1037thegame.com. Try to beat the best, that's not me included, with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. CD told me I won week two in our little group. CD's going to have to pick some names for me because I got no shot with Drew Brees being out. That's all I'm going to say. All right, we'll take a timeout when we come back. Love him, hate him, don't deny him. The Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame did the right thing. We'll explain next here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, welcome back, boys and girls and ladies and gentlemen. Great to be with you. CD is back there at the Master Control Suite, taking care of all things necessary and vital to make this show go. Don't forget our Half Shell Oyster House $50 gift certificate giveaway. Enter to win that $50 gift card to Half Shell Oyster House in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. And when you're traveling out and about, wherever you may be going, if you're heading to, it's a long way to Athens, Ohio, and it's a long way to Nashville, Tennessee. But if you're heading that way, make sure you stop off at a ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlet. They've got everything for your travel needs. I can't tell you the discounts that run rampant through the store each and every day. And the selection is phenomenal. Phenomenal. You think it? They've got it. They have got it. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. Yesterday, as we were wrapping things up, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame announced their class of 2020. And we'll talk with Doug Ireland, who is the chairman of the Hall of Fame committee here at the end of this hour. For Raging Cajun fans, you're thrilled that Charles Peanut Tillman got in it. What a career he has had. A remarkable career with just, you know, just his propensity to be around the football for so many years. My goodness gracious. He was dynamic and played most of his career with the Chicago Bears. So congratulations to him. It'll be quite a celebration come summertime. A two-time Pro Bowler, 38 career interceptions, forced 44 fumbles, played 13 pro seasons, all but a few with his hometown team, the Bears, from 2003 to 2014. Peanut Tillman. Of course, the one selection that's got, it's got people, you're either on one side or the other. And I love the passion of LSU fans. I do. I love the passion. But Nick Saban belongs in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame 1,000%. 1,000%. We all know what he did with his wins 75% of the time. He was 48-16 in his four seasons at LSU before jumping to the NFL for two seasons as the coach of the Miami Dolphins, wanted to scratch that pro itch. He readily has come out and admitted if he could go back, he said that's the biggest mistake of my professional career. I should never have left LSU. And I think if Nick Saban had not left LSU, how many national championships would we be talking about in Tiger Town? Honest to goodness, how many? With his ability to recruit, his ability to coach and motivate, his ability to get the right coaches in. Think of his coaching staff when he was at LSU. How many of those became head college football coaches? A plethora of them. A plethora. Look, they won Southeastern Conference championships in two of the years he was here, 2001, 2003. They won back-to-back-to-back SEC West Division championships, 01, 02, and 03. And he won the BCS National Championship in 2003. Stayed for one more year and then left. But more so than the wins, more so than the championships, Nick Saban brought an attitude. He brought a way of thinking that is still used today. I mean, vividly can remember him saying, don't look at the scoreboard, play 60 minutes. Don't look at the scoreboard, play 60 minutes. He talked about the process even then, way back then. And I just remember him walking in the building for his press conference when they introduced the new football coach to LSU. You just got the feeling of energy that there's a new sheriff in town, and this is strictly business, and he hadn't proven anything yet. Remember, he left Michigan State because he was in the shadow of Michigan. Michigan kept getting all the really good players, and Nick Saban was like, we feel like we're the forgotten stepchild here at Michigan State. Came to LSU because he saw a sleeping giant. There was no competitor from a Power 5 standpoint in the state of Louisiana, a fertile recruiting ground. And he saw all that and he jumped at the opportunity. It wasn't LSU's first choice, wasn't their second, third, fourth, or fifth. But they got the best one at the right time because he built a program. Now it took some help along the way. He had the right boss at the right time. Say what you want about Mark Emmert as the head of the NCAA, but don't ever doubt him as the head, the boss of LSU, and his emphasis on athletics and his emphasis on listening to Saban and the two of them joining together to build facilities, to build the academic center for student athletes, to build the indoor football complex and the football-only complex, all those things. Saban wasn't afraid to ask. He had a vision. He had a plan. Now, I wonder if LSU hadn't won a national championship in that 2003, if Saban would have stayed longer. Maybe, maybe not. But when Wayne Huizenga, owner of the Miami Dolphins, comes in his private jet with an open briefcase full of cash, it's hard to turn that down. Do I like it that he's at Alabama and has beaten us 8 straight times? No, of course not. Of course not. But I do not begrudge him for moving on with his career. I thank him for what he did for LSU. He built a program. He recruited like crazy. Les Miles carried that torch as long as he could before it got stale. Is it getting stale for Saban? No, it's not. But he laid the foundation, and he built the first 3 stories of the condo. And that foundation is strong. So I thank Nick Saban for what he did. Yeah, I'm a friend. Do I like it? Am I a friend when we play Alabama? Heck no, I want to beat his brains in. And it ticks me off when he wins and beats us. But he's got a 7-point advantage on you, just like Bill Belichick does in the NFL. Before you even tee it off, you're down a score. Because he has that intimidating factor about him, just like Belichick. They just do. So you got to overcome all of that. Nick Saban belongs in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. He was truly humbled by it. Did not expect it. He knows the vitriol against him. He knows that when he signed up to play to coach at Alabama, that was it for a majority of LSU fans. But he still has some near and dear friends in this part of the world. And we hate it when he comes in here and takes one of our top prospects to go play for him in Tuscaloosa. But he's just doing his job. It's up to Ed O to block him and not let him do that anymore. And you can start to see Coach O is starting to build that fence up, starting to put that wall up. But I appreciate everything Nick Saban's done. And you can't convince me anyway otherwise. Yeah, I don't like Alabama. Yeah, I want to beat their brains out. And yeah, when we do, we're going to party like it's 1999. And it's going to happen. Every streak comes to an end. But, man, those were some good times. And I just can remember so many people saying, yeah, we hate Saban, but, boy, if he would come back, we would love him all over again. You love the one you're with. But he's the best coach LSU's ever had when it comes to football. He just is. So I thank him for everything he's done. And I welcome him into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. He'll be there with his wife and his children, and it'll be great. It'll be a packed house, and we'll love them for a day. It'll be a lot better if we can go up to Tuscaloosa in November and beat them. That'd be great. But come Saturday, June 27th, I'll be in Natchitoches to stand up and clap for the man who brought LSU out of its Rip Van Winkle and brought it back to where it should be, one of the best programs in all of college football. All right, we'll take a time out here. When we come back, we'll go in the trenches. Enough of me. Chris Truax will talk to us about the Tigers and the growing concern defensively. And we got guys dropping like flies. We'll talk about it next here. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Yeah, I'm looking for the new Saints scratch-off from the lottery.
You want just one, or would you like to play the field?
Oh, hey, I'll play the field.
Let's go! Come on, jump!
Whoa, those players just came off those tickets, and they're playing a game on the counter!
Play the field with $5 We Are the Saints and $2 the New Orleans Saints scratch-offs from the lottery. Win up to $100,000. Check out LouisianaLottery.com for information on second chance prizes. Must be 21 to purchase.
And that's how you play the field.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Welcome back, man. I tell you what, you know, LSU plays at Vanderbilt in Nashville this week, and then they have an open weekend. You want to just get away from it all? How about a short little ride to Sportsman's Paradise in Hackberry, Louisiana. Boy, if you love to fish, to hunt, to look at birds, to walk a Creole nature trail, if you're in the natural gas business, boy, with a job there, I've got the place for you to go, and that's True Lodging RV Park, right in the heart of Sportsman's Paradise in Hackberry, Louisiana. It's True Lodging is kid and pet friendly. Plenty of green space. The pads are 25 feet wide and 60 feet deep. You got plenty of room for parking, plenty of room for privacy. You've got amp hookups, all utilities, Wi-Fi. You got it all. Washer, dryer. There's free parking on the premises, and there's all kinds of amenities nearby. True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry. Get away from it all. Enjoy Sportsman's Paradise at True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. Each and every Wednesday, we're thrilled to be joined by my man down in the trenches, a former offensive lineman. He was a great coach, college football coach as well. Chris Truax joins us now. CT, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, my friend. How you doing today? Great introduction. Thank you for the promotion. You do a fabulous job, man. We need to get your show down here one day.
Well, we'll do that. Absolutely, okay. Can do that. I want to look at the birds. I don't fish. I don't hunt, but I eat everything. So I'll let you do all that, and I'll just reap the benefits.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sum up. I believe you totally. Chris Truex joining us. I'm not concerned offensively. I'm concerned defensively. No Rashard Lawrence, amongst many others. Kalyvon Chaisson was questionable. Now he's doubtful. Got a lot of defensive linemen that are injured and out and about. So what are your thoughts about this LSU defense as we head to Nashville?
Well, you know, Georgia, you went into the Northwestern State game, I believe, with 4 to 6 starters. 4 of the 6 men that didn't play, and then obviously the safety that got hurt, and he's out for the season. You know, that affects your mentality, your maturity, your football team anytime you take the field. I know everybody's up in arms over our defense and so forth, but, I mean, man, they gave up 14 points and 280 yards of offense. I mean, wouldn't you? I'd take that the rest of the season, okay? And Northwestern State, you knew you were going to get Northwestern State's A game, which you did for about, you know, the first half, and then it kind of started snowballing, getting out of the control in the second half. You know, I look at this is where I think Northwestern State was looking ahead to LSU and looked past their Division II opponent the previous week. You know, going into Vanderbilt, unfortunately, I was on the LSU team that lost at Vanderbilt and in 1990.
Okay.
And, you know, after we'd beaten A&M and after we'd beaten Georgia, I mean, we were rolling. We would go in there. You know, Todd Kitchen, the last play of the game, caught a touchdown pass. They called offensive pass interference on Todd, and we ended up losing the game. But, you know, at that time they were running triple option, and, it was a struggle for our defense, to say the least. I think Vanderbilt had 13 possessions in the game and didn't punt one time, if that helps to say anything. But, anyways, it was kind of the demise of Mike Archer and his staff after that, because things kind of snowballed and got out of hand. But, this Vanderbilt team, once again, to the number 4 team coming in the country and a chance to produce. And I don't know, is it SEC Network, do you know, or is anybody picking it up yet?
Yes. SEC Network, okay. 11 a.m., yes.
Great. Looking forward to it. I know, I talked to some people. A lot of people are heading over to Nashville. And so I think you're going to have a great LSU following over there. It's going to be a beautiful day. You know, this time of year, the weather's going to be, you know, fabulous in the early morning kickoff. You know, I expect to see our defense once again play as well as they can play until they get back all 11 starters that they started the season with against Georgia Southern.
Yeah, Chris Truex joining us. We both played collegiately. You football, of course. Me basketball. And try as you might, and coaches can say all they want, LSU knows they're better than Vanderbilt. You knew you were better than some teams. It's human nature to go in there thinking, okay, I don't have to play like I have to play against Alabama in football, like I have to play against Kentucky in basketball. How did you get through those and perform at the highest level that you could against an SEC opponent that you knew was inferior to you?
Jordan, same thing. It was really at that age, you know, all those 18 to 22-year-old kids, that's when the coaches earn their money, in my opinion, okay? That's when these coaches have to get their players laser-focused and don't underestimate anybody. You know, Vanderbilt's going to give you every opportunity to win the football game. Your LSU is better at every position on the field than what Vanderbilt has at this time. No knock to Vanderbilt, because they've done a nice job the last few years. But it's up to that head coach to get his assistant coaches to get everything they can out of their players. And it's going to show on the field. I mean, you know, we're critical. Unfortunately, you know, it's what have you done for me lately business. And there's going to be a lot of eyes on Nashville here and LSU. You know, as fans, we expect to dominate Vanderbilt, and we get disappointed if we don't dominate somebody. I mean, once again, we dominated Northwestern. It didn't look like that, but if you go back and you really kind of pull up the stats and stuff like that, you're like, good Lord, Northwestern State. You know, they had some nice drives, but they still only put 14 points on the board and under 300 yards of offense. You know, if we can get Vanderbilt to do that, if we can get Florida to do that, everybody's going to be saying how great our defense is.
That's great. Great point. Great point. Chris Truex, kind enough to join us. Athens, Ohio is about 6 hours from Nashville. I was told by their play-by-play radio guy that about 300 people are coming from Athens, Ohio to see their hometown hero, Joe Burrow, play in Nashville. Have you ever seen anything quite like what he is doing this early on in the season through three games?
Well, I tell you what, we're a throw-first offense. Whoever thought LSU would have been a throw-first philosophy offense?
Sheesh.
It's impressive.
Not me.
They threw for about 500 yards this past week. And, I mean, I forget what how many yards he threw against Texas. But, I mean, he is racking up the yards. Didn't the odds on him in the Heisman change, like, from 500-1 to, like, 10-1 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and, you get his – I saw the University of Texas week being down on the field, seeing his focus and his attention to detail. That LSU's successful because they've got a guy like them at the helm. Now, here's what I want to do consistently. Let's get us a quarterback recruiting system that keeps bringing guys in like Joe Burrow because he's a proven winner.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't recruit you got to recruit to your style. And look, if Joe Brady gets an offer for some gig to go somewhere as an offensive coordinator, you got to open up the checkbook, right? You got to pay this guy to keep him as long as you can.
Well, I'm always curious about the NFL guys that come down to college. You know, but that NFL game is strictly business, and now they got to come down to college, and they got to deal with all the baggage that teenagers bring to the table, and parents, the deal. And so some guys might want to be looking to get back out to the NFL to go to move on to different situations. But the deal is, he's brought in a system that so far out of the first 3 weeks, it's proven it can win. I think the obviously the telltale signs with the Florida game, the Alabama game, when the conference starts,
right.
Let's see how everything adds up then, instead of just giving the keys to the kingdom right now.
Right. You mentioned the baggage that kids bring. The NFL's become college football, right? It's like they've got the transfer portal. All of a sudden, if you're not winning, players want out. They want to leave, or they get in an argument with the coach. I want to be traded. So the two leagues are kind of mirroring one another.
You're right. I mean, those general managers in the NFL, those 32 teams, they got to be pulling their hair out. Because you take, for example, you always talk about the Patriot way. If you would have told me the Patriots were going to be taking Antonio Brown, I couldn't have seen that, coming. But, there's only, the NFL is all about guys that can do unusual things. And Antonio Brown, unfortunately, is one of those guys that might not have the personality traits that are best for the team, but, he can catch the ball on third and long.
It's a hot topic around the country. In 30 seconds, Nick Saban is going to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I say bravo, well-deserved. What say you?
Amen. First class. What a great representation of the state of college football. I mean, he is the premier elite college football coach. His Achilles heel, he couldn't get it done in the NFL. But there's no doubt he's the master of it in the college ranks. So, kudos to Coach, well-deserving.
He is Chris Truax. He joins us each and every Wednesday. CT, enjoy, Bloody Marys and mimosas at the Truaxes for Saturday with the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Holler at me, man. We might have the board going early. Come on over.
You got it, brother. You take care. Appreciate the time.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Chris
Good
Truax,
time.
Brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. Fishing, hunting, birding, Creole nature trail walks. All you in the natural gas business, they've got jobs there. This is the place to stay. It's kid and pet friendly. Plenty of room with all the amenities. True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. We're back. Doug Ireland of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame joins us here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
That's exactly what the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame did. They took the hottest topic, they doused it with gasoline as they announced their class of 2020, 35-member committee voted. And, boy, what a class it is. Doug Ireland is the Hall of Fame chairman, and he's kind enough to join us. Good job, Doug, man. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Jordy. Absolutely wonderful and very excited about yesterday's news.
Saturday, June 27th in the lovely village of Natchitoches is when the class will be enshrined. And, boy, you got a who's who from the great Globetrotter, Mr. Dunbar, to Duck Dynasty, to Peanut Tillman. What a class. And we'll get to the headliner in just a minute, but kind of sum up, Joe Horn's in it. I mean, it's quite a diverse group.
And you hit the nail on the head. This is several committee members and I were talking, and we think this may be the most diverse group in terms of different sport disciplines. Somebody, we've never inducted a bodybuilder before, but you can't deny an 8-time Mr. Olympia, who's a former Grambling football player, Ronnie Coleman. You know, we've never inducted what truly is an entertainer, Harlem Globetrotters, but Sweet Lou Dunbar was a sensational college player at Houston and a great high school player in Minden. Yep. And Sweet Lou, you know, is an iconic basketball figure. And we've only inducted three other outdoorsmen. And, of course, there's no bigger name in the outdoors world than Phil Robertson and Duck Dynasty's brand. It is just global. We really have with Phil and with Lou Dunbar and Ronnie Coleman, we have international sports celebrities.
It's really awesome. And Terry Bradshaw owes everything to Mr. Robertson because he retired from football to go do outdoor stuff, and Bradshaw got to play at Louisiana Tech. So that's pretty good. But as we talk with Doug Ireland, who is you do such a tremendous job to promote sports in this state of Louisiana, and I commend you for that. Here in Acadiana, when you mention Charles Peanut Tillman, it doesn't get much better than that.
My, what an incredible gentleman, scholar, and American. And obviously a great football player. I don't know that I've ever had the opportunity to visit with anybody any nicer than Peanut Tillman. And you know, he's a guy who has achieved an extraordinary level in the game of football, but he continues to achieve as a citizen, as a community servant. And, you know, he's a dynamic player. I mean, holds the NFL single-game record for forced fumbles with four and ranks sixth all-time in forced fumbles. And you know, 38 interceptions, that's bumping up on Pro Football Hall of Fame credentials there. So what a fabulous guy, and had a great career for the Raging Cajuns.
Joe Horn, beloved by Saints fans. That's another. You're going to have to increase the capacity of your seating area for this banquet because it's going to be overflowing more so, I think, than ever before, mainly because of the last but certainly not the least member of the class of 2020. I think it's a no-brainer. It certainly has drawn interest not only locally but nationally. And that's former LSU head football coach, current Alabama football coach, Nick Saban. Tell me about the phone call you made to Nick, and how did that go?
Well, if he's not on the sideline and he's not focused on his football team, Nick Saban is a very gracious gentleman who was quite surprised and really shocked that this would happen. And then he was very, very appreciative, very touched, and very excited to go into a Hall of Fame with people like Eddie Robinson and Charlie McClendon and great, great coaches and great players. And it's tough for people to get their arms around it, but he is very grateful to LSU. And he is very grateful to the state of Louisiana for the opportunity that he got here and for the kindness and the support that he received while he was here. And he's a professional. He understands that a lot of LSU fans now are think he's Darth Vader. That's competing. That's just what you have to do. And but he was very, very appreciative, he couldn't have been nicer, and is excited about bringing him and his wife Terry to Natchitoches for our festivities next summer.
He's the first sitting college coach that's going to be elected to the Hall since Grambling's Eddie Robinson back in 1985. So that's says it all. Did you not to go behind closed doors and open up the vault, but when his name was brought up, was this a topic of discussion on how this would go over in this crazy state where you have some that really love Saban and always will, like me, because of what he brought to LSU and took this sleeping giant out of the somnambulance and brought it to light, or there's that other faction that no matter what, they're going to hate him?
Yeah, there's a 35-member committee, and as you can imagine, there are all sorts of perspectives during our meetings and during the year when we discuss this, when we see each other. There certainly wasn't a unanimous opinion on Coach Saban, nor is there very rarely a unanimous opinion on anyone. I mean, Peyton Manning, that was easy. The question with Coach Saban, this was his first year on the ballot, and we kind of had an informal rule that we went by, which was when Les Miles and Nick Saban were coaching, as they went on, we wanted to wait if we could, as both became eligible at the age of 60 as active coaches. And we've never inducted anybody that young as an active coach. But we wanted to wait until perhaps they weren't coaching anymore, or if they kept going at it into the late 60s. I think ultimately the mindset of our committee was that the sitting LSU coach should go in first. And I think some of us had 2023 circled as a time to honor Coach Saban, because that's the 20th anniversary of the national championship season. Of course, 2020 is the 20th anniversary of his hiring at LSU. But those were just things bounced around. There was no, and once Les was out of the game and inducted last year, that opened the door for us to consider Coach Saban. And it was a lively discussion, and there were certainly people on both sides of it, but you got to get essentially two-thirds or more of the committee to support you to be one of those eight. There's a point system. It's really a challenging thing when you have 150 candidates, and on any particular ballot you can only list five names. So that's a huge challenge for the voters. It's not like we go through and we got to elect a coach. No, it doesn't work that way. You can just as easily elect a lacrosse athlete or a sailor or a boxer as you could a coach or a football player or a baseball player. So it's a very broad table that the committee has to consider. And it's rare that there is unanimous acclamation agreement. Ultimately, anybody who gets in has tremendous support from the committee.
As long as Doug Ireland is the chairman of the Hall of Fame committee, it will be done up front. It will be done honestly. To you and all the other 35 members of the panel, job well done. They all deserve it. And thank you for some time today, buddy. I greatly appreciate it.
Jordy, it's always a pleasure, brother.
Take care, my friend. That's going to wrap up hour number one. Hour number two, straight ahead.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on this hump day, Wednesday, September the 18th. I just love baseball. You saw Carl Yastrzemski's grandson hit a home run in his first trip as a visitor to Fenway Park, where his dad just controlled left field, and Kevin Biggio hits for the cycle, just like his dad did back in the day for the Astros. He homers in the third, singled in the sixth, doubled in the eighth, and tripled in the ninth as the Blue Jays beat the Orioles 8-5. I love seeing father's sons and grandfathers and grandchildren and just the game of baseball. It's really, really, really cool. All right, we got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. We all know Drew Brees is having surgery probably as we speak. John Hendricks of the Saints will comment on a comment made by Sean Payton that was very, very interesting today. And Michael Huguenin makes his college football picks for a very busy week number four. But we do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Mr. Domain, if you please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
If you haven't had some Cajun Chef products, boy, you're really doing yourself a disservice. You got to try them. Do yourself a flavor. Good afternoon, Clinton. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy, on this Wednesday afternoon, halfway through the work week. And my goodness, I saw this pop up earlier today online, and that was the fact that LSU is going to be bringing back the purple jerseys two more times, including this Saturday against Vanderbilt. Let me ask you this, Jordy, because you saw those purple uniforms. Should the Tigers wear those consistently?
No, they're going to stick with the tradition. I like the tradition, but the purple with the white helmet, the white pants, was a pretty darn good look, if I may say so for myself. I'm surprised LSU hasn't come out with the all-black look. You know, the all-black with purple and gold stripes, black helmet, I mean, something like that. Vanderbilt's going with their, you know, their white-looking uniforms, whatever they want. That's fine. So LSU will wear twice more. They do it for non-conference games. Now they're doing it in the SEC. It don't mean a whole heck of a lot. Just go play the game, and LSU will be fine. But I got to admit, the white helmets, white pants, purple jersey was a pretty sharp look as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think they should just do it that way, Jordy, if they're going to want to try to make the purple uniforms a thing for at least a few games, a lot like what we've seen with the Los Angeles Rams rocking the throwback unis when they're at home. They've been doing that a lot since returning over to the City of Angels. I would love to see that a little bit more.
Everybody's trying to, you know who's really gone by the wayside is Oregon. They were the trendsetter with all this stuff. I guess they're not much of a factor anymore because they aren't winning it. And Mike Leach said the Ducks would just fly away and get out of harm's way. So I don't know. It is what it is. It's a good recruiting tool. Players like it, and that's what counts. But LSU's going to stick with their tradition as well they should. It's a pretty sharp uniform and has been for a long, long time.
It's amazing to see what's been going on with – you brought up Oregon. It's perfectly interesting you brought them up because I think they definitely have lost a lot of their luster, but maybe it's just because of the fact they're playing at like 9 o'clock at night. You're not up to watch a lot of those games, especially over here on our side of the country. But flipping it over to the NBA, we've talked about a lot with what happened with the FIBA World Cup where we saw a lot of the D-League and the G-League players. Now it feels like everybody's kind of getting ready to jump in and be committed to the 2020 Olympic basketball team with Steph Curry, the latest, and dare I say the greatest, to join this Olympic team and try to be the Dream Team 3.0.
Is there a player whose game is more well-suited to international play than Steph Curry? None whatsoever, because they live with the three ball. He's the first. I promise you, we're coming loaded. We're coming to show the world, so get ready for LeBron, get ready for Anthony Davis, all depending upon being injury-free. We're fixing to go and roll the Olympics, trust me.
And I think that should be as expected. No more of those. If I'm not mistaken, that was Argentina, right, in the 2003 Summer Olympics?
Yeah, I think it was. Yes, yes. But look, the game's in Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
So that, a lot of these players have deals over there. They can sell their shoes over there. So they'll mix patriotism, trust me, with a lot of promotional business as well. But we're coming loaded, and we will destroy the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah, exactly, Jordy. And, you know, you brought it up earlier in Hot Topics about the fact that Drew Brees having surgery probably as we speak. Well, it looks like even without him, the odds of the Saints winning the NFC South haven't changed much. They're still the favorite at 2-5. But what's interesting, wow, Jordy, is some prop bets for week number three. So let me get your idea on just one of those right now. And that is okay, over under 225.5 passing yards for Teddy Two Gloves this Sunday against the Seahawks. Which way are you leaning?
200. I'm going to go under, because I think the Saints are going to really try and get the running game going. I think they're going to try and shorten this game, stay around as long as they can. And we'll talk with John Hendricks here shortly. Sean Payton, when asked about Taysom Hill as the backup quarterback, said you assume. Who's to say he's the number two? So he's kind of leaving it out there as to, is it Bridgewater? Is it Hill? He's not tipping his cap to the Seahawks. I think they will both play. I think there'll be a lot of running involved in the ball game. So I'm going to go under on it.
I'd probably wind up pounding the under as well, but I'm always a person that likes to go over. So I'm going to go slightly over. Say 235 is to be where your boy Teddy Bridgewater winds up hitting. And Jordy, LSU,
right,
LSU yesterday revealed their 2020 baseball schedule, 37 home games, including, I was surprised to see this, the fact that you have Alec Box Stadium is going to be hosting the Wally Pontiff Classic this year when they take on Tulane on March the 24th. Were you surprised by that in the slightest?
Well, no, because the Shrine on Airline won't have a team. They won't have anybody to man the facility, so, you know, they agreed Tulane. They'll play Tulane this year here. They'll probably play Tulane next year over there at maybe at the Shrine on Airline or at Turkson Field. So it doesn't surprise me. I think they had to set something in stone, and they're not sure exactly what's going to happen with the former home of the Zephyrs, a.k.a. Baby Cakes, who are leaving town for good.
Yeah, I think they might be already out of town because I believe the regular season for minor league baseball came to a close just a couple of days ago. And I got to say, it was just interesting to see, to say the least. And now we're going to flip it on over to the NCAA as a whole, because New York Senator Kevin Parker is the latest to throw his hat in the proverbial ring to pay college athletes. It just feels like it's going to keep on happening, Jordy. Mind you,
yeah,
it's going to
be
put in the courts for years and years and years. It seems like it, but it feels like everybody's starting to get on board state by state.
That's what it's going to take. It's going to take a rippling effect. It's going to take everybody from every state getting involved in this thing. Two or three states not going to be enough to make the NCAA dissuade things. So you got politicians in South Carolina, Maryland, Colorado, Washington, and now New York have all discussed creating laws to change the way college athletes are compensated. So it's going to take a whole lot more than that. Let's see what happens. See if it floats. But it's going to be a long while, in my humble estimation, before that comes to fruition.
All right, Jordy, last one here, and we're going to kind of go back to where we kind of were a little while ago about Drew Brees. Is he will not, I repeat, not be on the injured reserve, according to Sean Payton, after undergoing that surgery on his thumb. Does that make you think that we see him just be out the minimum 6 weeks and be back after the bye week on November the 3rd?
I think that's what Sean Payton's thinking about. I mean, if you place him on IR, he's got to be he's got to miss X amount of games, more so than the six. So they're thinking that, you know, nobody knows Drew Brees more and better than Sean Payton. He understands his work ethic. He understands his pain tolerance, his pain level. So the warrior that Drew Brees is, maybe, just maybe, we will see. If you can't grip it, you can't throw it. So let's see what happens. But as soon as they tell Drew Brees you can start rehabbing, he will go after it with a fury, and maybe he comes back sooner. Time will tell. Don't count him out, though.
All right, that's about all I got, Jordan.
Count him out. All right, CD. All right, that's more than enough. There are your hot topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet, using the finest spices and the finest peppers. The Biard family right there in St. Martinville, a family-owned business, generation after generation, all the way up to almost 90 years now. They use the best. They do it with a passion and with a purpose. So do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything, like my eggs in the morning, I mean, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. You can find it at your favorite grocery store, your favorite restaurant. But just in case, bring one with you. You won't regret it. Cajun Chef hot sauce. More on the New Orleans Saints. What's the role of a Taysom Hill, Teddy Bridgewater? Will both play? Is there a game plan for both? John Hendricks and I will discuss next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. It's time to talk New Orleans Saints as we speak. I don't know if the surgery's already been done or not, but Drew Brees in Los Angeles under the care of Dr. Stephen Shin to repair the injured thumb. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicle, joins us each and every Wednesday. We're thrilled to have him. John, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Just recovering a little bit from this West Coast trip.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so let me read you a quote from one Sean Payton earlier today when asked a question about Taysom Hill being the number two quarterback. Sean Payton said, "You're assuming he's the number two." Sean Payton said they'll approach Sunday's game with two quarterbacks, and he said that can be an advantage against the Seahawks. So read between the tea leaves there, and what's Sean Payton saying, and why is he saying it that way?
Well, look, I'd say you're saying that because you got to generate some offense, right? And, you know, when Brees went out, you know, make of what you will with Teddy Bridgewater's performance, you know, I think he started off strong. I think the first half, it was definitely tell the difference you have. Second half, you know, you're getting penalties that bring back some big plays in both halves. And so, look, I think they got to get some spark going. They got to get the run game going. I think when you bring in Taysom Hill, you can get a change of pace, obviously, there. Just because, you know, you're going to have to respect that he could throw the ball and he could run the ball. And, you know, look, that's the thing is, you look at a Saints offense that only can put in field goals and put up 9 points overall on the day, and that's just not going to cut it. So, look, you got a lot to figure out, a lot to unpack. I think it's a smart move just going into these games that you're going to have to survive, I guess, if you will, on without Drew Brees. And so I think Taysom Hill is going to give you that advantage. I'm all about it. You got to roll with it. Roll with the hot hand.
I'm with you. I'm with you. The heck with, oh, we have a starting quarterback and we got to stick with him. No, I mean, if things aren't going good, or even if they are, you do a change of pace, whatever it takes to stay afloat. No injured reserve for Drew Brees. That tells me that they're counting on Drew Brees and the surgery to go well and for him to get that rehab going and maybe, just maybe, 6 weeks from now, he might be good to go.
Yeah, look, you know, if we know anything about Drew Brees, it's he is such a competitor, and he is it's killing him to be off the field. And, you know, just watching him on the sidelines on Sunday, you know, he's kind of exiled himself and to himself and his thoughts. And, you know, obviously it could have been a lot worse for the Saints here with his injury. But, you know, the good news here, if you want to find some silver lining, some optimism, is they're getting the hard part of their schedule out of the way in September. I mean, it's only week two of the season. And right. Then you got your divisional games that are up against you, you know, of course, that back half of the year. So, look, you know, I think we've spoken about it, that I thought about 11-5 as a good prediction for the Saints, maybe 10-6. And so, look, maybe with the way the NFC South is performing, you know, 9-7, 10-6 is a good way to go. But, look, you know, overall, Brees is going to take it in stride. I know it's going to kill him not to be on the field. But, you know, again, this is why you have a big insurance policy in Teddy Bridgewater. And, you know, from my perspective, this is where the defense has got to play better, and they've just got to take over ball games.
No question. Well said. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicle. According to sources, the Saints re-signed former Ohio State quarterback JT Barrett to their practice squad. They also have two open roster spots after placing second-year wide receiver Keith Kirkwood on the injured reserve, and they released second-year defensive tackle Taylor Stallworth, surprisingly, there. But what do you think the Saints do? Who do they move up? It's got to be a wide receiver or two, right?
Yeah, they need wide receiver help in the worst way. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Traquan Smith. Obviously concerned there for his ankle injury. I mean, Austin Carr is there, but he hasn't played. You know, I was told that he was dealing with some minor issues, injuries on the injury front, but hopes to get back in there quick. So, you know, look, they got a lot to figure out here, right? Because you got Michael Thomas that does his thing. Ted Ginn Jr. didn't see a single target against the Rams. That's really shocking to me. And so, look, you've got to have somebody step up. Jared Cook dropped some passes. And, you know, again, overall, this offense has got to play better. They got to play mistake-free. Not totally mistake-free, but, look, the offensive line was getting whipped around. You don't know what's going to go on with Andre Pete. So now you got Will Clapp in the equation because Nick Easton was down. So, look, you know, it's a bad time. Injuries are never convenient for any football team, but you got a lot to figure out, a lot to unpack, and it's really a surprise on Stallworth, but maybe it's more of a nod to how Sheldon Rankins is progressing, and Stallworth can be a guy to just come right back on the practice squad, and they got to free up the roster spots to make some moves here.
Yeah. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicle, with the latest on the New Orleans Saints, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Saints got to get the running game going, don't they? And can they do that at a sustainable pace to take some pressure off of Bridgewater / Taysom Hill?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's ideal. In a perfect world, you can get that run game going to where you're not going to have to worry about, you know, putting Bridgewater in some third and long situations, third and you know, whatever that case may be. I mean, look, I think that, again, you get the running game going, it's going to open up a lot of things. I think it keeps the Seahawks defense honest to where you're not having to beat them with Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill. And, you know, look, I think this is where Sean Payton's offensive genius can come into play, right? I think that, you know, you can get some positive plays, positive results, not have them come back for penalties. Because, look, Bridgewater had a couple plays when you get the tight end screen, you find Jared Cook for big plays, but they're nullified by penalties. So, look, I know it was a tough task dealing with Aaron Donald and that very talented Rams defensive front. But, look, again, you got a very talented Seahawks front. And you're going to have to just, again, manage it, try not to put yourself in second and long, third and long, and give Bridgewater a chance to at least make some something of nothing.
John Hendricks, kind enough to join us. Seahawks are 2-0, but they've got a 3-point differential. So they've scored 49. Their opponents have scored 46. They won one at home. They won one on the road. What do you like besides Russell Wilson? Tell me about this Seahawks club.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, obviously they were surprised last year, I mean, right, because everybody expected them to go into rebuild mode, and you know, Pete Carroll, one of those tenured coaches that have been around. And, you know, again, it's getting a little bit of everything, right? They get elevated tight end play. They get defense that shows up when they need it to. You know, maybe didn't look totally impressive against the Bengals. I guess that's the thing. And Steelers came back a little bit on them. So, you know, they're playing tight ball games, only went in by a 1 and 2 points here. So, look, you know, when you look at it, Rashad Penny, going to give you a little bit of look. Chris Carson, I mean, they kind of like to mix it up in that backfield. And then Russell Wilson, we know he can beat you on the ground too. DK Metcalf is kind of a decent threat. Tyler Lockett has come emerged as their possession guy, if you will. And Disley, the tight end, you know, 2 touchdowns on the day last week against the Steelers. So, look, they can beat you in a couple of ways. I think if you can attack them defensively, try to disrupt Wilson's timing in the pocket, that's always been a good thing. But, you know, the Seahawks are obviously going to know that, and they're going to try to get the ball out as fast as they can. So, look, I think you look at them defensively, they're very talented. You've got Wagner back there, one of the best linebackers in the game right now. You got Wright, obviously, partner in crime. Griffin's huge to them, too. So, look, you got to when you get a chance, you got to beat them. And I think they're an easily beatable team. But Saints cannot shoot themselves in the foot here. They've got to go in there not feeling sorry for themselves and just show people that, hey, we're still in this. It's only week 3, so stay with us.
They're good. They're not the Legion of Boom anymore, and that's a good thing. We'll see what happens. John Hendricks, West Coast, we appreciate the time as always, buddy, and keep up the great work. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, John Hendricks, Fox Sports, Forbes Sports, and Canal Street Chronicles, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. They've reigned as America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company's founded back in 1939. Peterbilt's maintained its enviable position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Coming up next, we switch to the college game, Hump Day with Huguenin. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic with all the picks of a great week 4 here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, nothing better than Michael Huguenin to make you start heading downhill, getting ready for it. I think so far, without a doubt, the best college football weekend to date. We've got some really good games, but we start. Michael, good afternoon, buddy. How are you? Awesome. Before we get to games, I got to get your opinion. The UAB athletic director has requested a live Komodo dragon at football games. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's a little bit, they're dangerous. So I think I read where he said, well, you know, I was thinking about that, but I'm not going to do that, which is pretty smart not to do it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Maybe we could get Mike Leakes to talk about Pac-12 mascots, SEC mascots, and the Komodo Dragon. That was priceless. But, okay, we finally have a good weekend. We've got some matchups between ranked opponents. Let's start off in the SEC. Not getting much attention, but I think a huge game. Number 8, Auburn at number 17, Texas A&M.
Yeah,
this
is a
good one.
Big game in the pecking order in the SEC West. I think the winner stakes claim to being the third best team in the division. Still not convinced that Auburn's offense is all that. The defense, obviously, is quite good. I don't think either team's going to be able to run the ball very effectively. So that means it's up to the quarterbacks. And while Bo Nix did have that big game in the state of Texas earlier this year, I think this game's going to go to Texas A&M because I have more faith in Texas A&M's receiving core and passing game than I do in Auburn's receiving core and Auburn's passing game.
All right, who bounces back better? Kentucky, which had the game won last weekend and let it slip away against Florida, and then they're at Mississippi State, who got humbled a little bit by Kansas State. So who bounces back in this one?
Kentucky lost to the better team. I don't really think that highly of K-State, and K-State did a nice job winning in Starkville. And if that game had been maybe in Manhattan, I'm thinking, okay, Mississippi State has an excuse, as it is, they really don't have one. This is another pecking order game, but obviously not a division matchup, but sort of a pecking order as to where you are in the SEC. I think that, you know, Tommy Stevens is not 100% healthy. I think that's hampering Mississippi State's offense. I think Sawyer Smith last week, the guy who used to start at Troy, sort of moved seamlessly into the UK starting job at quarterback. I think UK's receiving core is a little bit better than people thought. They have a really good offensive line again. The Kavassier Smoke kid is a pretty good running back. Defensively, their secondary can be exploited. I'm not sure Mississippi State can exploit it. The Mississippi State receivers aren't very good. So before the season, I'm thinking, okay, this is a Mississippi State win for sure. And now I'm thinking this is a toss-up kind of game, and I'm sort of chickening out. But who plays better at quarterback? Which team's going to run the ball better? I think that Kentucky's going to answer the affirmative on both questions, so I think UK is going to win.
Oh, okay. How about that? Let's get it out of the way once and for all. I think we all believe that LSU is going to be the winner over Vanderbilt in Nashville. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff on the SEC Network. LSU favored by nearly 3 touchdowns in this thing. Which way are you going? That's a lot of points.
Yeah, it is a lot of points. LSU is obviously going to win. The spread, I would not bet this game just because, you're right, it's 11 a.m. kickoff. Morning games, you know, Vanderbilt's used to playing a lot of those early games.
Yes.
LSU's not. I wonder about LSU's mindset at kickoff. I think this is a case of LSU's going in knowing we're a lot better than these guys. And if we don't mess around, we're going to win. But I think when your mindset is, if we don't mess around, we're going to win, leads to messing around. So, yeah. But not enough that they lose. This is a game that's going to be all about LSU's mindset. If they're sharp from the get-go, they're going to blow the Vanderbilt's doors in. If they're not sharp, maybe it's a 17-point win. But you're right. Okay. There's absolutely zero question but that LSU's going to win. The margin is the question. If LSU plays its best game, yeah, it'll beat the spread. I just don't know if they're going to play their best game because they don't have to, and they know it.
Right.
And that's the thing.
Right.
When you don't have to play your best and you know you're going to win, sometimes you don't play your best. And you muddle through,
case
you get
in point,
win, and leave with an ugly victory.
Case in point, last Saturday, they let Northwestern State hang around in the first quarter. Only led by, 10 points at the half, something like that. And then they said, oh, okay, time to wake up, and they end up winning by 51. So time will tell. All right, number 11, Michigan, at number 13, Wisconsin. My gosh, Jim Harbaugh, all the pressure. People are starting to doubt him as a coach. Wisconsin's not chopped liver. That coach, Chris, always seems to have them in contention. They've got a heck of a running back. Do they have a quarterback? Can Michigan win on the road?
This is a gigantic game. And it's at Wisconsin, but all the pressure is on Michigan for the reasons you talked about, Harbaugh. The last time we saw Michigan, I don't know what they want to do offensively. Shea Patterson, I thought, was going to have a big year. He doesn't look comfortable in that offense. LSU and Michigan have been a lot alike the last decade, frankly, and, okay, we have a good defense, but can we get enough offense to win big games? And the answer for both teams has been no. Now, this offseason, both teams went out and said, okay, we're revamping our offense. Well, LSU definitely followed through on that. Michigan, I'm not sure. I don't know what Michigan's offensive identity is. They lack a star running back. Their offensive line's talented. They get John Runyon Jr. back at left tackle. That should be a positive. They got some talented young receivers. But I would argue they're still not making the most of Shea Patterson. I've read Shea Patterson was vastly overrated out of high school. He never should have been as highly thought of as he was. Well, maybe that's the case. But I also think that, I'll be honest, if he stayed at Ole Miss, I think he would have put up big-time numbers. And we've talked in the offseason about they tried to, square peg round hole thing. And I still think, to an extent, that's the problem with Michigan's offense. They bring in Josh Gattish from Alabama to try to take the offense into the 21st century. It has not worked yet. Obviously, the season's still extremely early. But it is interesting. If Wisconsin hasn't allowed a point in two games. They haven't played anybody still. They haven't allowed a point. Jonathan Taylor is a legit Heisman guy, and yet all the pregame talk about this one is about Michigan. So if I'm Wisconsin, I'm loving that. There's no pressure, even though Wisconsin is playing at home. So I think Wisconsin's going to win because I don't believe in the Michigan offense. And the talk about Harbaugh is going to ratchet up exponentially if they were to lose.
He is Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. No troubles for Clemson as they take on Charlotte. No trouble for Alabama as they take on Southern Miss. But we've got the Fighting Irish heading to Athens. This is the marquee matchup, but I don't think this one's close. I think Georgia blows them out.
Yeah, I think actually the game I think is going to be better is Wisconsin-Michigan. You look at Notre Dame's defense, they have really struggled to stop the run against Louisville and New Mexico. Now, I get the fact that New Mexico, they're all about option, that kind of stuff, but I don't know how physical Notre Dame is up front on its defensive line. They lost a lot of key players off a playoff team. And when you lose key players, it takes a while to get used to playing without them. And plus, I don't think the talent level is anything close to what they lost. So Notre Dame also is not the best team running the ball. They can't stop the run, and they're struggling to run it effectively. Mm-hmm. So, I think that Georgia wins this game by 2 touchdowns. The only way Notre Dame wins this is if Ian Book has a tremendous game as a passer. That's potentially possible. I think Notre Dame's got some interesting receivers, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure how good Georgia's secondary is. I don't think they have a legit shutdown corner like they had last year with DeAndre Baker. Also wondering about their pass rush. And Notre Dame, I think, can protect Ian Book. But I think offensively, Brian Kelly talked about what makes Georgia so difficult. He says, it's the quarterback. He's really good. I think this game, though, it's all about DeAndre Swift and Georgia's running game. I think DeAndre Swift runs for 125-plus, and Georgia wins comfortably.
Comfortable. I'm with you. I don't think this one's as close as what CBS may have hoped for when they put this into their doubleheader prime time slot. Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. Under the radar, not much talk about it, but Oklahoma State's at Texas. Sneaky good, or is Texas that much better than Oklahoma State?
No, sneaky good. And I think the reason LSU's offense showed that Texas's defense is exploitable in the secondary. And Oklahoma State has the nation's number one rusher and the number one receiver in terms of production. And I'll be honest, the Oklahoma State running back's better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Okay. So Oklahoma State's defense, though, I think it's not in the same realm as LSU's, and LSU struggled to stop Texas. So that's a roundabout way of me saying this is going to be a shootout. I think there's going to be a ton of points, a typical Big 12 game where the winner – scores high 40s, maybe even low 50s. I think it will be extremely entertaining. I think Texas wins because it is at home, but this is a night game that's going to take a long time to play because there's going to be a lot of passes. And again, I don't think either defense is going to have a lot of success. I think this is a game that if you can get a defensive stop, the importance will be magnified because there's going to be a ton of points on the board. And maybe it comes down to if we get 3 stops, we win. If we get 5 stops, we're for sure going to win. And it may be the last team with the ball wins. But I think this will be a very fun and entertaining game to watch. And it's on opposite Georgia-Notre Dame. And I'll be honest, I think I'll be watching a heck of a lot more of Oklahoma State-Texas than Georgia Notre Dame because I think Oklahoma State Texas will be close.
Speaking of entertaining, it's a Thursday night matchup. Houston sneaky under the radar. Houston at Tulane. Willie Fritz is doing a good job for the Green Wave. Houston comes to town waiting for this quarterback to live up to the billing. This could be a fun one.
Yeah, no question. I think Tulane is better than people think they are. I think they showed that in the first game where they just absolutely mauled FIU. FIU is an extremely well-coached team that was dominated in all facets. So, and Tulane made Auburn sweat. I know it wasn't the most beautiful game for all, you know, either side, 24-6, a trench warfare kind of game. And I think this one has the advantage. If I'm a Tulane fan, I'm thinking, okay, I've watched Oklahoma play two Power Five opponents, and they lost to both. Oklahoma shredded them, and Washington State beat them by a touchdown. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a Tulane fan, I'm thinking, okay, we can hang with these guys because the Houston defense is absolutely nothing special. Now, De'Aaron King, he is a talented quarterback. I don't think he's getting a lot of help from his offensive line yet, but I think that's the aspect. If I'm Willie Fritz, if I'm one of his defensive coaches, we can't let this guy put up 400 yards of total offense on us. I would much rather, if I'm a Tulane coach, make sure De'Aaron King beats us with his arm. If he throws for 380, fine. Just don't let him run for 100. So I think this game's going to be close. I think Houston is the better team, but would not be surprised. I think Tulane is extremely well coached. They're a little bit more talented, I think, than people want to give them credit for. I also don't think Tulane's going to beat itself. So that is, like you said, a sneaky good game under the radar and a huge game in the AAC. I think there's no question, but the UCF is the standard bearer in that league. Who's the second best team? Is it Temple? I don't know. Is it Houston still? Because they have lost the two Power Fives. Yeah. Is it Tulane? So we're going to find out a lot more about Tulane and Houston this week and a lot more about the AAC.
Another could be a really good game. Sun Belt meets the MAC, the Raging Cajuns of Billy Napier. They run the ball for 400 yards a game. Going up to the land of Frank Solich in the MAC with Ohio University. What do you think?
Ohio is, I would argue, the best coach team in the MAC. They may not be the most talented, but they are the best coached. Solich, he's obviously had success at Nebraska. He's had really good success at Ohio. Nebraska, Nathan Rourke is a difficult guy to contain. But you're right, ULL, I think they scored, 70 last week? They beat an FCS team, but still, that's a lot of points to score no matter who you're playing. That is an interesting game also. It's a MAC Sunbelt game. Which of those two leagues is better? And I think Ohio is expected to be better in the MAC than ULL is in the Sunbelt. So even if I'm a Monroe fan, this week I want ULL to win because it reflects better on the Sun Belt. So I think Ohio certainly defensively is going to be a test. But, if ULL gets its running game cranked up, they have the ability to pull the upset. I think Ohio is the better team, but ULL, if they can run effectively 200 or so yards, they could pull the upset.
Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, give me your top four Heisman Trophy candidates today.
Today, let's see. I would have Jalen Hurts up there. I would have Tua up there. I would have Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin up there. And probably right now I'd have Joe Burrow number four. Burrow's playing well. Hurts is playing out of his mind, which is great to see. Tua is, basically picking up where he left off last regular season. And Jonathan Taylor, he is a stud running back. And this year, Wisconsin throws the ball a little bit better, which frankly, Jonathan Taylor ran for 2,000 yards last year with inept passing attack. If you're an LSU fan, it's like, oh my God, look what Darius Geis does. Look what Leonard Fournette does. And that's when LSU could not throw the ball. Well, Wisconsin could not throw the ball, and Taylor ran for 2,000 last year. He is really good this year, and I think he's a little bit better because the offense is more well-rounded.
Last one, give me your four playoff teams here and now, based upon what you've seen so far, who's playing the best?
I think it's, you know, I think right now I would, if I had to pick the four right now, off what they've done and how they looked and what I think, the thing is, part of the thing is what, it's so early still, what I think they're going to do, I would have Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Oklahoma. I'm interested still, Georgia, LSU, Wisconsin is an interesting team. Utah, I think, is the only Pac-12 team that has a chance. I think Utah actually can win 11, maybe even 12. They got a big game against SC. I think they're going to beat SC by double digits. But I think Ohio State and Oklahoma, Ohio State, you watch them play, and I know Alabama and Clemson are inordinately talented defensively. I don't think there's a faster defense in the nation than Ohio State's. I mean, their secondary is filled with guys from the SEC footprint. Chase Young is a monster defensive end. The linebacking core is a little bit iffy, I think, but, man, Ohio State's defense, the speed. If you're an SEC team, watch Ohio State play defense, and you're thinking, my God, this is an SEC speed defense. So, and Oklahoma, I mean, they're averaging what? They're averaging 10.8 yards per play, and Lincoln Riley's upset because we're not doing enough. So, they're fun to watch offensively. And again, Hurts, he's been there for 8 months. Looks like he's been there for 8 years. He moves seamlessly into the offense. He's fun to watch.
He's Michael Hugin of The Athletic. We'll see what happens in week four. We'll talk about week five next time. Thank you, my friend.
All right, talk to you next week. Appreciate it.
That report, Hump Day with Hugin, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. We'll be right back to wrap things up here on The Jordy Hultberg Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
D.C.'s little capital Exxon always takes us home. Right there, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobriggs with everything you need for your travels, plus that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with the best cheeseburger ever. D.C.'s little capital Exxon, I-10. At the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobriggs. History lesson time was not a good day for the Fighting Irish. They hope they do better in Georgia between the hedges this weekend. Good luck with that. But it was on this day, September 18th, the year 2010. Michigan State, in a nail-biter with Notre Dame, tries to tie the game up to send it into double overtime. But instead of kicking it, they fake a field goal. And Aaron Bates tosses a TD pass to a wide-open Charlie Gayet as Sparty beat the Irish in overtime. It was quite the night for Sparty and Michigan State. September 18th, the year 2010. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great one. Cake and some ice cream and a present or two. You share your day with happy 43rd birthday to Ronaldo, the Brazilian soccer star with three World Cup titles. Happy 30th birthday. Gosh, he seems like he's been playing forever. Serge Ibaka. Yes, and happy 48th birthday. Was looking for him in Austin, but where has Lance Armstrong gone? All right, that's going to wrap things up today. Special thanks to our guests, Chris Truax, John Hendricks of Canal Street Chronicles, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, and Doug Ireland with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Thursday means NFL. The Schwab will join us with his picks. See what he says about the Saints against the Seahawks. CD, great job as always. Thanks to all of you for listening. Our partners that make it possible. Without you, we couldn't do it. And the 103.7 The Game, thanks for having us a part of the team. We only have one of these Wednesdays. Make it a great afternoon. Rest of your evening. Come on back tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.